Right. And welcome back to Brain Fart with your host, Todd Tariq. I'm excited to bring the pod back. Big hiatus, didn't post at all in 2023. It's been years, but we are starting this back up. And if you haven't listened to anything before, the format is rambles. There's no edits, there's no cuts. We just speak. I have a topic prepared today. We'll get right into it. Today we're going to be talking about meritocracy and the difference between meritocracy and kind of my philosophy that I subscribe to, my moral system that I have developed and have become very firm in the past couple months, which is very humanist, you know, very inherent value. And I've found a lot of joy and a lot of happiness from this line of thinking and this way of thinking. So I thought I'd share it. And I thought it would be a good way to get back into the podcasting, because I do miss this. This was a great project that I started. I'm glad I still have it. I don't even know what I'm going to call this. What's like season 2.5, 3? I don't even know what season we're on. I don't even know what episode. But we're just going to start in 2024. And we're just going to get going. And so yeah, I thought we'd start some definitions. And so I thought I'd start with meritocracy, which was defined as the idea that people should advance in society. They should be successful based on their talents, values, knowledge, or productivity. It's really kind of the system we live under, or are supposed to, you know, are led to believe that we live under right now. The idea that if you work hard and you are honest and you don't cheat people, then you will progress in society and you will be successful under the current system. However, as we know, this falls apart. I've seen this fall apart because there are criminals who never get caught, bank robbers who rob, and there are liars and cheaters who make off with loads of money. And that is that. So I found out today, because I was researching a little bit. Also, by the way, I researched these very loosely. Research them, you know, so anything I say, not a scientist, I'm not a professional researcher. I'm just doing this mainly to share my ideas and thoughts. So don't take anything I say too seriously. Go research it yourself. Go look up definitions. Go find your own conclusions. I always suggest that, and I defer to experts. But the term I found out today was used, meritocracy, the term, was used by a British sociologist and politician, Michael Young. And so it was the first time the term was used, and it was actually used in a critique relating to the rigid class structures and inequality that are inherent from meritocracy. But the idea of meritocracy, and not that word, you know, but the idea of meritocracy and its definition has been something that's been around for, you know, since the ancient times, whether that's in ancient China or through, we'll talk a little bit later about the philosopher kings in Plato's The Republic. You know, the idea of the most virtuous people should be, you know, the most philosophically knowledgeable people should be in charge of everything, and that everybody was to subjugate to the philosopher kings. You know? Great idea from a philosopher to have everybody bow down to him. You know, real good idea there. So we move into the inherent value concept. This is kind of what I'm going to be sharing today. I'm going to be making the case for. And the way I kind of look at this is the belief that people are inherently valuable on the basis that they are human. Value in this system is not determined by ability, knowledge, or productive effort. You know, the idea is that just because you have more knowledge, you have more further education, you have achieved, you're built, a system, you're a laborer. It doesn't make you any less or more valuable. The idea is that value is determined, in our society as you're inherently valuable based on the fact that you're human. And, so there's, we're already into the realm of philosophy. I already mentioned the Philosopher Kings, but there's some big philosophical kind of under points here that I want to get to. And I mentioned at the beginning is kind of the humanism, philosophical foundation, and the idea is that, there's the inherent qualities of being human, which is, that we're sentient, rational, we're moral beings, and that we shouldn't value on accomplishments or status. And I think that this, this is something that is a frame of thought that's ancient on both sides, right? Whether it's meritocracy or valuing people on their inherent value as just being human. And you see the influences across, ethical history and ethical development, laws, and education as well as politics. Again, the whole idea of inherent value for me stems from we're all human and that you are valuable whether you do a job, whether you are able to, whether you are unable to do a job, whether you went to school, you didn't go to school, doesn't matter. You're valuable just because you are human and you are alive. And that is good. That's how it should be in my worldview, of course. So diving into more some of the ethical implications of meritocracy and inherent human value. So meritocracy, we're sold it on this promise that it is the most fair, right? However much effort you put in, however much, however much productive force you have, however much knowledge you have, it's supposed to be this fairness. It's the great equalizer is, what it's sold to us as. But it's not. It assumes just in its definition that everyone has an equal starting point and an equal access to the same opportunities. I'm 24 years old, going on 25. And I've been profoundly privileged in my life to have had the ability to have access to the opportunities that I have. I primarily grew up in Canada, achieving a pretty good quality education. I had some wonderful teachers. I had wonderful opportunities to go to, wonderful Canadian universities with some of the leading voices and leading faces in my field. And ultimately, I'm surrounded by structures that provide me rights and privileges that other people around the world wouldn't get. It's just as simple as that. I do not have the equal spawn point to a child in a rural village in even Pakistan, right? So in that sense, it's faulty from the premise of it being fair. It's not fair. Because the starting points for every person is not the same. And so what ends up happening is the system actually emphasizes inequality. It emphasizes the differences we have between people. the person who is more educated, the parents are more educated, are more likely to have a more, you know, further educated children. If you're confined to work in, you know, poor, harsh labor conditions, then, you know, only with a lifetime of hard work can you get your kid into the opportunity where they don't have to be a laborer. For most people, if your dad is a laborer, you will be a laborer. And, you know, immigration is seen as the kind of method of upward mobility, right? We see that with immigrants coming, you know, like myself, I'm included in that category, but they coming into a Western country with more rights and privileges provided, and having the ability to access means that wouldn't have existed in our home countries. So it's not fair, and it never has been. And so this is one of the kind of ethical implications for me. We're talking about fairness here. Second, I think it defines success very narrowly, right? When you define the value of things based on the productive value that they are able to achieve, then non-academic successes, you know, emotional intelligence, people who work with people and support people are not successful in the eyes of the system. They're not considered valued in the eyes of the system. But I'd argue, as someone who works in social work, community work, that work is needed more now than ever, right? Following the COVID-19 pandemic and seeing the rapid rise of living, seeing housing, especially in Canada, we have a big housing bubble. We have housing that's out of reach for most people my age. I think that at the same time, we see tons of implications of, well, we value hard work, and we don't value people, right, inherently. And that's why homeless populations are not taken care of. That's why people aren't able to access the mental health resources they need. That's why privatization in a lot of the Canadian economy has taken over. But we're going down a very, very steep rabbit hole. And so I think I'm gonna reel it back in, because I think that's important here. The other thing is that meritocracies do lead to a high level of competition. Every person still needs to fight for their place in society. They still need to, you know, prove themselves. It's important and it's crucial as part of a meritocracy-based society for you to constantly be in competition. But we see this in our current world, and I see this all the time. The idea of competition embroiling and taking over every part of our life can lead to some issues with self-esteem, right? It can lead to a lot of negative impacts on our well-being, on the way we view ourselves, the way that we view and value ourselves is really, you know, it becomes something that's taken out of the hands of yourself and it's placed into societies. And we see that because we see people who work, who out of no, you know, fault of their own, for, you know, bad or good luck, don't end up with the opportunities. You know, maybe they do everything right. They go to school, they get, you know, work hard. They still don't get those opportunities. They always get passed up. And we see those individuals. We see the self-esteem. We see the people who are struggling, right? You know, the societal system and the structure that we have should build people up. And I see meritocracies as a negative in all senses of the word. It emphasizes something that is not crucial to people living and surviving and thriving. It puts people in constant competition. It negatively impacts their well-being. It makes them feel worthless if they do not produce enough, if they are not valued enough, if they don't have enough knowledge. It becomes about accumulation instead of the human journey, the human experience, which has always been, you know, the human experience has always been one of balance, one of loss and gain, and, you know, balance in all things, to find happiness and experience, you know, an immense amount of happiness. You have to be sad sometimes. And I think that meritocracy focuses too heavily on the negative impacts and pushes us to basically not value the right things in life. It is under the guise of fair, you know, fairness and justice and what is just and fair, but it does the opposite. It leads to more injustice and more unfairness. And I think the humanist point of view is much more sound when it comes to that. You know, we think about, you know, take yourself and put yourself in the view. Now, all of a sudden, you and your society, your community, and your, you know, your workplace and everything, they don't value you just on your, you know, merits, on your productive output, or your, you know, knowledge, or your education, or your status. They value you on your own value. You're just human and you're valuable. You deserve things. And this system of thought, it really, you know, it promotes inclusivity. And I think that's a big one, because it's, you know, meritocracy divides people into categories. The people who work hard, the people who, you know, are lucky, and the people who struggle and come down on bad luck, and the people who are non-productive for whatever reason, that might be within their control or not, you know. And so really thinking about things from, you know, the standpoint of being, you know, everyone's inherently valuable, you see this sense of community building, the sense of inclusivity. I'm not saying it's going to be perfect. There will always be some level of things that divide us. But when your central value of your society is, and your kind of your central value is that everyone is inherently valuable, just on the basis that they're human, you're now more inclusive, because you're not trying to put someone down, or you're not trying to, you know, it fundamentally changes how you look at the world. And it fundamentally changes how you interact with the world, because now every person becomes valuable in your eyes, you know, in what they, in their existence. There's no longer someone who, you know, I don't have time for this individual, or I don't have, you know, they're below me, and I can't make time for this person, or that they're not valuable enough to have. No, they're valuable. They're valuable on the basis that they're human. So again, you see this idea of inclusivity, community building, definitely those things that we see as the forefront of issues that we're facing today. We see divided communities. We see, you know, there's a big sense of the word community when I think of it. And this is a little tangent, I'm going to allow myself to go on, is I think back to, you know, the olden days, maybe with rose-colored glasses, but think back to them in some ways. And I think of when we didn't have the internet and, you know, you lived in a local world where you were connected to the people around you. And that idea of community was something tangible. You could touch, you could interact, you had influence over, you could take and give, and there was so much, especially because I feel like I'm on the threshold as someone who's like 24, I feel like I'm on the threshold of where I still grew up in a time pre-internet, or when the internet was very slow. I think my older siblings probably had more vivid memories of that. But I didn't grow up with social media for the most part. You know, we got to a point when social media and, you know, all of the all the apps and MSN and Skype. But even in the early days of those, we were connecting and interacting with the people who were in proximity to us. We had tangible effects on the world. And I think in a lot of ways, we have moved away from the sense of local communities. And I'm not gonna sit here and say that the internet is all bad, because in the same vein, you also see where previously there would have been isolation in certain industry, in certain, you know, groups or you know, whatever, where an individual might feel isolated. They now have a community with similar beliefs to them anywhere in the world. They can connect with them. They have the access to them. So I'm not saying that it's all negative. You know, it really does, you know, fundamentally the internet connected people. And I'm not someone who's against technology. I just think that we are very divisive now in the world. We're all about dividing things into, you know, sections. That people and everything should be very divisive, and the society should be divisive, and the classes should be very divisive, and you know, this is not something that I value at all. I value people coming together, and I value the tangible interactions that we can have. And in a system where, you know, like in humanist system or an inherent human value system really addresses that need. So this is my side tangent. I'm going to get back on track here. So it also addresses that problem we were talking about with fairness, because it addresses the fact that people start in different starting points. That your spawn point, that your launching location into the world, you know, is something that you have no control over. And it brings justice because it is more fair. It is more fair to acknowledge the background of someone, to turn it, and I do it, is and say, oh, you know, this is the great shift from equality to equity. The idea of that it's not about looking at everything and putting everyone at the same starting line and then, you know, letting them go. It's saying, okay, what backgrounds led to these people coming to this starting line that they have come to? What things have they overcome? What value does that have? And so, yeah, I'm a big advocate, because it does address, and it is more fair. It is more fair to value people and to provide services and to provide structures in society that serve everyone. Because inherent human value is something that is, you know, once you start from that starting point, that everyone is valuable, right? And that there is no one person that, you know, that advancement should not be based on your productive output or your knowledge or any of that. When we come into thinking from the point of view that all people are truly equal, then your perspective will improve. And I tell you this because it's changed how fundamentally I view the world. It's changed how I interact with people. It's changed how I, what I value, you know. One of the biggest kind of critiques or, you know, negative kind of things that people often bring up when faced with these kind of arguments is the idea of complacency or lack of motivation. And see that, you know, if we value everyone in, you know, inherently, then, you know, people aren't going to want to do things that we need. We need this motivation. We need this competition. We need this merit-based system because it propels people. And I'm just going to say this plainly. I think it's bullshit. I think it's absolute horseshit. I think this is something that we have told ourselves as society growing up to justify the pursuit, right? To justify the, it comes back to the self-esteem point. We want to justify that we're not crazy and that we're valuable. And so this is one of the great lies. Under a humanist or more inherent value-based system, you have more conditions that are conducive to, you know, making more innovation happen, making people their starting point, you know, more supportive. I don't think that the way, you know, we, you know, there's complacency now. There's complacency now, there's lack of competition. But, you know, I think that it doesn't change the fact that you create conditions in which people are meant to thrive. That there will still be competition because we have egos. We do strive for things. There is still innovation, you know, in spite of competition. I think competition is a human thing. And then it's at its best when people approach the competition with the idea of equity, the idea of fairness and just competition. And meritocracy, we already talked about, creates injustice and unfairness. Anyway, so this brings me into kind of the part where I want to talk a little bit about myself and how my mindset has changed over the past couple of years. So I used to, I went to Carleton University, and I, you know, studied engineering and did work, in an engineering job for a little bit. And the entire time I felt this immense weight on my shoulder and this immense pride that I was somehow so valuable and so amazingly important because of the knowledge that I had struggled to achieve. I had felt that I needed, you know, that I needed to now reap the rewards, that I had struggled, that I had achieved this knowledge, surpassed any expectation. And now it's time for me to reap the reward and benefit, and that I deserve a place higher in society than anyone else. I had a very egotistical point of view. And the more I worked with people, the more I worked in social work type settings, the more those concepts started to break down. You can't work alongside some absolutely brilliant people and recognize the hard work that they put in and see how society doesn't value them, how society tosses those people aside and says that that's not a productive skill, doesn't feed a bottom line, so it is not valuable. And I started to see people as humans slowly. I saw people as, you know, class structures, and I always strived for that upper middle class, you know, potentially high class living eventually one day. And I realized that that thought pattern had made me deeply unhappy. I had some of the worst self-esteem issues that I've ever faced in my life. A big reason why I didn't do the podcast, why I stopped doing it, was because I was ashamed, and I was un, I was ashamed of what I had to say and that how I was going to be perceived. I had to maintain decorum and class and blah, 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 bullshit. All of it bullshit. All of it bullshit. The second I started to see that people are inherently valuable and that their value does not depend on what they produce, not what they can do for me, but that they are valuable on the basis of their humanity, then all of a sudden, self-esteem issues start rolling away. I'm not saying I don't have self-esteem issues. We all do. We all have self-confidence issues. Our well-beings fluctuate. It's dynamic. There are so many factors in our lives. But I have gotten better. And I am in much healthier in terms of a much healthier place, I should say, in terms of like my self-esteem, confidence, my body image, my love and careness towards myself, towards people around me. It's much, much improved. And the second point I wanted to make is that I found in my experience that valuing people inherently allows more people to experience greater freedom to, you know, then innovate. I have seen how our current society suffocates people, puts them on a, you know, basically working to live. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just live inherently? That our society is evolved enough to the point where we can just live? That living is not something that is a thing that you have to work towards? And I think about this because of all the technology that we have, all the automation, introduction in the AI revolution, which is in full swing. You know, think about how we could restructure society. Think about the values that we as individuals, who we make up society, so the values of our individual beings, how we can influence society, how we can influence our structures. And I will end this by saying that the second you start to see value in everyone around you, the second you start to realize that being human is enough, you will find contentment within yourself. You will find contentment within your peers and your loved ones. You will find grace. You will find a ton of peace. And I found a ton of peace. I found a ton, a metric ton of peace. in this past year, and I'm really happy that I had the opportunities that I did in my life to experience a true growth. You know, it was so hard and difficult, and I'm still on the journey to, you know, improve myself and become more knowledgeable, but on the basis that that's what I want to do, that these are pursuits that I want to engage in. And so we're back on the podcast. You know, I was gonna do an episode where I kind of explain why I'm back, but I thought this would be a good intro because it is a, I feel like it's a reflecting point for me to take in the last 2 years of my life and really kind of, you know, process it and move forward in a lot of ways. And not only that, but move forward in healthier ways with my beliefs evolving and changing, with my experiences, and just really enjoying the part of life which is living. And yeah, so I want to end this by saying, you, as the listener, you're human, you're valuable. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me, and I'd love to hear from you. So you can get in contact with me on Twitter, which is now X. Last time I did a podcast, it was Twitter. So we have been gone for a while. But yeah, feel free to share your experiences, thoughts, opinions. This podcast is more done for me to reflect on things. So there's never an expectation that anyone is listening, especially this far into the ramble. But if you are, I appreciate you. And I hope you have a good night. Thank you.